The Ontario Student Assistance Program, or as many know it, OSAP. The student aid program that's been around since the 60s and has helped millions of students to date is now facing some major changes. Dufford's government has flipped the system on its head, and students have a lot to say.
University or college student living in Ontario right now? If so, you have just been royally screwed over by our provincial government.
This means that post-secondary education has just become even less accessible.
OSAP is trying to paint an image that it's becoming more sustainable. But in reality, it's killing dreams, opportunities, and everything we ever stood for and were proud in Canada.
You're listening to Policy at the Park. I'm your host, Krishi Vashisht. 2 weeks ago, the Ontario government announced a series of revisions to its post-secondary education system, starting in September 2026. Amongst these changes are a $6.4 billion funding boost and lifting the province's seven-year tuition freeze. The funding will be distributed over the next 4 years, with part of it being invested in Northern and Francophone schools.
Ontario's post-secondary sector is facing unprecedented pressures that impact the system's ability to deliver high-quality education and build Ontario's talent pipeline.
That was Nolan Quinn, Ontario's Minister of Colleges and Universities. So, the most controversial change from this announcement is the allocation of grants and loans. Currently, eligible students can receive a maximum of 85% in grants and 15% in loans. Starting in September, students can receive a maximum of only 25% in grants and 75% in loans. Students haven't welcomed the changes. Many have taken to social media to express their concerns and their anger.
The politician who has no post-secondary education said we need to pick better courses to get out of poverty.
Apparently, the little guy doesn't matter as far as Doug Ford is concerned. He should be a little bit more grateful that we're not holding him accountable for the fact that he lacks the education and the grit necessary to be Premier of Ontario. Doug, get your shit together.
I am a student who is already part of stimulating the economy, and he wants me to pay even more.
Glenn Jones, the former dean of the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education and current professor at the University of Toronto, is a leading voice in Canadian provincial and federal education policy.
I think the government simply decided that this was a way that they had to find money somewhere for this, and they found it from OSAP. My own sense is I think that's a bad decision.
My co-producer Mitchell Fotz spoke with him and gained a little more perspective on how these cuts fit into the larger provincial landscape.
Thank you for joining us, Professor. So you've been researching higher education in Ontario for a while. Can you explain a bit of the history and key trends in that area right now?
The biggest issue was the fact that we were largely funding a higher education system based on international students. So the single largest source of revenue across the system, regardless of institution, was international student fees. And then the second was domestic fees, and the third was government. So as a public policy question, the notion is, what's the right balance? So that's been one of the challenges. And it's particularly egregious in Ontario. I think Ontario has always had the lowest per student funding in the country for 30, 40 years at least. So that's the sort of scenario leading up to the current circumstances. And after the 2024 decisions on the part of the federal government to kind of regulate and decrease international student visas and change the mechanism by which they are awarded, that had dramatic impact in Ontario more than any other province. Almost every institution in the province has gone through some sort of rationalization in terms of its economic circumstances. We've seen thousands of job losses and hundreds of academic programs either being paused or abandoned. So there's been a huge transformation as institutions try and struggle with this environment where international student fees have been decreasing. There's been modest increases in 2024-25 in government funding and no change in tuition until the fall of 2026.
So in that sense, looking at the province's announcement, big part is the piece changing reliance on international students. But in terms of how students are going to bear the burden of more tuition and changes in OSAP structures, what's the biggest issue here?
I mean, I think the biggest change and the most dramatic change is OSAP. And that's those are the implications that I think that we have to be very conscious of in terms of the system. You know, I'm not worried about tuition fee increases that are below inflation. To be quite honest, I'm not particularly concerned about a 2% increase in tuition and seeing that sustained. I think that's actually quite modest in the scheme of things, given other the inflationary costs that the institutions and others are facing. I am much more concerned about OSAP. So we've got lots of good news about government funding and those kind of grants. I think what sometimes people forget is that a lot of those, that new funding, a lot of it comes from the fact that they've saved money on OSAP. And so if we talk about vulnerabilities and vulnerable populations, especially financially vulnerable populations in the province, what we're seeing is a situation where somebody who's upper middle class or wealthy maybe wasn't going to have a student loan. And keep in mind that majority of students don't take out OSAP. So those individuals are paying a couple hundred bucks more in the context of tuition. But those who are really hard done by and who are particularly financially vulnerable and who've been depending on large amounts of OSAP funding, those individuals are now going to experience $3,000 or $4,000 more per year of costs associated with higher education, because what had been a situation where the most of that money was coming to them in grants and a small amount of loans, that's now inverted. So while it's a good news story about government funding, the fact that they made this change to OSAP, I think, is the hard to defend story, to be honest, because essentially it's regressive.
You mentioned hard to defend. The main reasoning the government is giving for the OSAP changes, limiting grants to 25% from 85, is it lines up with other provinces. But Ontario isn't necessarily every other province. Is that reasoning strong, or is there more going on here?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of ways of thinking about that. Constitutionally, they have separate responsibilities for education, and we have different post-secondary systems. And, you know, Ontario has, many would argue, underfunded its higher education system for decades and decades. So if the notion was we have to look to others in order to find out what they're doing and replicate those decisions, Ontario certainly hasn't been doing that. And it certainly hasn't been funding its higher education system in parallel with the way other systems have been funded in the country. So that's part one. But part two, though, is in terms of OSAP, it may be true that the level of the grant loan ratio, I think, was probably higher in Ontario than it was in most other provinces. The question is, what's the right public policy decision on this? And I think that they've going from 85 to 25 is probably too far. So there must be a healthier balance between the two. In other words, that grant loan ratio is one that I think is an important public policy decision, and I think they've gone too far in one direction.
So the government oversees higher education, but as far as making financial support available to students, is there a gap in making sure it's accessible across the board, no matter what school a student attends?
I think one of the questions is whose responsibility, mm-hmm. and it seems to me the assumption that a government provides money to an institution so that the institution can subsidize students it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense to me. I think it makes much more sense to me for the universe for government to assume responsibility for student financial assistance, because that's the great equalizer, right? That's the mechanism by which, through our society, we provide a mechanism for students from more vulnerable backgrounds to participate and have access to higher education. Right. I think the universities can clearly and should clearly do what they can to increase access and pathways and do other things to assist in ensuring that there are multiple ways for students to have access and to create a more affordable system of higher education. If the government's going to give money to institutions in order to improve programming and they're going to reduce OSAP, but then ask the institutions to use the money that is just gave them for programming in order to subsidize the students that the government has taken money away from, that doesn't make any public policy sense, other than essentially you've delegated responsibility to the system rather than the responsibility of governments.
This week, Doug Ford made comments basically telling students not to pick basket weaving courses and to follow the money.
I'm not one to say, you're picking basket weaving courses and there's not too many baskets being sold out there.
What do you think about those comments and what do they sort of point towards in terms of where the Ontario government's mindset on education is right now?
I think that one of the challenges we have is our ability to understand the labor market and understand the direct relationship between education and the labor market. And I think sometimes provinces and provincial governments believe that that relationship is direct and they don't recognize how much of a black box many of these relationships are. My own sense is that it's a problem to make too many assumptions about direct linkages between education and the labor market, because the labor market doesn't always respond the way we think they do, and the labor market itself isn't always very good at predicting what it wants, right? Companies themselves may not understand what their labor market needs are going to be 5 years from now. You know, if you ask many of the companies that have huge layoffs in the last year, they wouldn't have predicted that 3 years ago. And when we talk about academic programs, we're talking about programs that students may enroll in the fall of 2026 and graduate in 2030.
Lastly, I guess just wrap up, let's talk about what this all means. With changes like this, do we have a sense of where education's going in Ontario?
Well, I mean, I think the government is clear on certain things, right? I mean, it's clear that it wants to have a higher education system that is linked to the labor market, you know, and it wants to ensure that the Ontario industry and the Ontario population has a higher education system that's responsive. I think it's also quite important, and I think this is perhaps a challenge moving forward. I think it's really important for universities to be autonomous. In other words, I think that universities need to be autonomous from certain kinds of government interference. And I think this is a government that has perhaps not respected that as much as some others have. If you looked at the former Bill 33 and a number of other changes that have taken place, the government has moved more than any other Ontario government that I know of towards greater intervention in those decision processes. I'm not convinced the government is in a better position to make certain kinds of decisions about academic programs, about student needs, than universities are. So my concern moving forward is that as the government decides finally to give some more money to the system, that the government will also at the same time decide that that gives them even greater leverage to manipulate the system or intervene. And I think that's problematic because I think universities are in better positions to make some of those decisions than government is.
Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, have a great weekend.
You too, have a great weekend.
So Professor Jones was able to provide us with a more academic lens on the issue, but what about who's actually going to be affected by this? The students. Immediately after the initial press release, students began to organize and voice their concerns. Here to speak about the real-life impacts of Ontario's educational climate and the student response is Amrita Lodeswaran, one of the organizers of Save OSAP London, a student-led advocacy group.
Thank you so much, Amrita, for joining us today and taking time out of your day to speak with us. So yeah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good today.
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. I wanted to start by asking, tell me a little bit about what program you're in.
Okay, so I guess on the academic side, I'm currently a second year student in integrated engineering. And integrated engineering is basically a mix of engineering disciplines like chemical, civil, electrical, and software engineering.
So what role does the Ontario Student Assistance Plan play in your current pursuit in post-secondary education?
It covered a significant amount of my finances when attending post-secondary, and it was definitely it reduced a barrier for me to come into Western because I'm one of the first people in my family to be able to pursue post-secondary, and I think it's a really insane opportunity to me.
Yeah, and so then how do, you know, Ford's changes to OSAP now impact on, you know, your pursuit in university?
I know that Ford's changes don't just impact me, they impact a lot more people than I think people want to realize, because to me, my personal finances are now affected of, do I consider doing a gap year or something in order to pay off some of the loans? And it's such a big accessibility and affordability barrier, I feel, especially within communities that are like more marginalized or don't have the financial resources that are necessary, that are available to them to be able to afford post-secondary or supplement at least part of it, that now they're not able to do so.
Yeah, and like, so take me back to the moment when you first heard the announcement, right, of like the tuition freeze, you know, being dissolved, of these OSAP like changes. Like, take me back to that moment and, you know, what were your sort of initial reactions?
It happened at a very like conveniently timed moment, in my opinion, where one, it was right before reading week, so most people in university would have been busy with their midterms and not be able to fully process the change that just happened, where like major universities like U of T, Waterloo, McMaster were releasing their like admission rounds.
Yeah, like what was your process like with like sitting down with the information and really understanding what just happened?
When I sat down like with the information and with the the announcement that came about for its like OSAP model change, my first thought was, well, it's an announcement. It's not a declaration. So what I mean by that is, while he announced the change, he's not going to implement it until the fall semester. I also want to point out that with Ford's change, they mentioned how the model was 85% grants to 15% loans. It's such a small population of people who actually receive that percentage of grants to loans. And it's very like, it's very like low income and like marginalized communities. Like, it feels very targeted in that regard.
Yeah. So I also want to ask, like, so what are the conversations been like between you and friends or classmates? Like, what has the general discourse been like amongst like your peers?
I want to say that the general discourse I've had with students as a USA counselor and as someone who's really involved in the engineering community, the reaction has been, what the f-? Again, there's so many people it's been affecting, and it's like, it's really like demoralizing in some sense, because I think a lot of people in engineering come here with the pursuit of, I want to study this like prestigious degree and I really want to do my best here. There's that culture in engineering, I feel. And now with the recent cuts to OSAP, I feel like it's very disheartening.
So Ford made a comment on how students should be mindful of the programs they choose and not pick, quote, basket weaving courses, essentially saying that STEM courses are one of the more viable ones to choose. You're in engineering. What do you think of what he said?
I would say I wouldn't take anything Ford says relatively seriously, given he studied at Humber College for 2 months, proceeded to drop out, and then decided to go work for his father's business, which I'm sure is an incredibly viable career path for most Ontario citizens.
You're one of the organizers for Save OSAP London. Can you tell me a little bit about the demonstrations you're coordinating and what you hope comes out of it?
The purpose of this protest is to raise awareness regarding the OSAP changes, but it's not just specific to Western students. Rachel, Huron, Kings, anyone in high school is free to attend. And if you have any family members, of course, feel free to join, because I feel like this Ford administration has gutted so many industries, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education. This is only the beginning.
Save OSAP London held their first demonstration at Victoria Park today, February 28th. I spoke with protesters, and here's what they had to say.
I'm here because I believe that education should be accessible to everyone in the province.
I'm going to be using OSAP, I'm sure, in the next 2 years. I don't even know, with how the world's going, I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish my undergraduate as an English student.
Across the province, more advocacy groups, such as the Ontario Protest and the Ontario Student Strike, are organizing other demonstrations. They want their voices heard and futures secured.
Education should not be a privilege for the wealthy. It should be a right for all of us.
I'm your host, Krishi Vashisht. Our senior producers and editors are Mitchell Fott and Cynthia Jimenez. Thanks for joining us.